This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 14th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 138. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary, the big deal feature, sounds of the Cullen Commission public inquiry into money laundering in BC. Here, two of the world's top criminology professors weigh in on why BC's beneficial ownership registry should be free to search. Also here, the head of the RCMP's Criminal Intelligence Office discuss how money laundering factors into BC's organized crime underworld. Plus, the head of the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association tells a committee of lawmakers why the province's privacy laws need updating. Plus, I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is civil disobedience the only solution to the Vancouver Park Board's stubborn refusal to reopen Stanley Park Drive to vehicles? The Cope and Green majority on Park Board is exploiting the pandemic to keep the gates closed, and it is studying ways to reduce vehicles, assuming they reopen the park to vehicles. But think of it. The critical mass bike protests led to the building of bike lanes. The 420 marijuana protests led to the legalization of pot. So, why not a convoy of 100 honking cars demanding entry to the park drive, and when they get around the barriers, go on a slow 10-kilometer-an-hour tour around the park and keep honking the horns? Meanwhile, Bryce Cassavant won his court battle against the Conservation Officer Service last week. Cassavant was fired in 2015 for refusing orders to kill black bear cubs. Defunding the police is a major topic around the continent in major cities. Maybe we should look at other police agencies too. Maybe we should also talk about defunding the Conservation Officer Service in BC. The wildlife control cops are more apt to kill a black bear than to tranquilize and relocate. Too often, the bear's only crime is breaking into a garbage can left in the open by a stupid human. And finally, Vancouver's Pride Parade will happen online in 2020 because of the pandemic, but when it gets back to the streets in 2021, the Vancouver police will not be in the parade. Organizers do not want them. But does that mean that Pride will also raise its own money to hire its own private security patrol and traffic managers? Who will Pride organizers call if, for instance, some homophobic wackos show up to chant and wave signs and disrupt the parade? Just something to think about. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
You gotta do what?
What?
Dr. Henry says, we're gonna have to wait to vaccinate. So just stay strong and sing this song. You gotta wash your hands, don't touch your face.
John Mitchell and his Vancouver independent single, Do What?
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
Joyce Ng, Phila Su, and Clifford Lowe in the South China Morning Post. Tiananmen vigil organizers, media boss Jimmy Lai to be prosecuted on incitement charges over Victoria Park gathering, Hong Kong police source says. The case, which will go to court on June 23rd, stems from a crowd of thousands turning out in defiance of a ban on the yearly candlelight gathering. Meanwhile, Sarah Zhang reported, China issues fresh warnings on traveling studying in Australia. Canberra needs to squarely face the problem of rising discrimination, Chinese Foreign Ministry says. Latest remarks come after Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says his country will never be intimidated by threats or trade our values in response to coercion. The Australian government is pushing for an international investigation into the origins of the coronavirus. Aaron Patrick in the Australian Financial Review. University of Queensland student seeks $3.5 million damages. Drew Pavlou, a recent guest on the Breaker.News podcast, is suing the university, its chancellor, and vice-chancellor. Pavlou was suspended by the university after he protested against the university's close relationship with the government of China. Pavlou was attacked on campus by students from China who had military training. Pavlou has also endured threats and sought police protection after criticism from Chinese propaganda outlets. Keone Everington in the Taiwan News, Zoom shuts down account of Chinese dissident group in U.S. On May 31st, Tiananmen Square survivor Feng Shuo Zhou and other Chinese dissidents living in the U.S. held an event to mark the 31st anniversary of the massacre, only to find the group's account suddenly closed down a week later. Zoom accounts of Tiananmen student leader and Chinese dissident Wang Dan and the Hong Kong Alliance were also shut down. A Zoom spokesperson told Axios News that the account had been shut down to comply with local law, an apparent reference to regulations in China. Although the company said it had reactivated the account, it raises questions about why Chinese law was being applied to a video conference being held in the United States. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. You gotta help your neighbors all across this land. To keep us safe, they are brave souls. By their courage, I'm amazed. 'Cause we're all in this together, and we've got to brave this stormy weather. Burnaby City Councilor Joe Keithley of DOA and Mayor Mike Hurley with "We're All in This Together."
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
Maxine Bernstein in the Oregonian. Portland's new police chief, Chuck Lavelle, wants to take police bureau back to days of true community policing. Lavelle spoke to reporters 2.5 hours after he was formally sworn in as chief by the city auditor via a Zoom video conference on Thursday. Lavelle was named the city's new chief Monday after Jamie Resch made the unprecedented move of stepping down and asking the lieutenant to fill the top job. Resch, who was chief for just under 6 months, said she considered the community's needs and believed the change was necessary in the wake of the public outcry over George Floyd. Lavelle said he wished the focus would turn from defunding the police bureau to funding and promoting what works. Kelly Greenberg of King 5 Seattle. Seattle businesses helping provide supplies for Capitol Hill protesters. Demonstrators are calling the area around 11th Avenue and East Pine Street the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, or CHAZ for short. They want to turn the East Precinct into a community center and said the CHAZ is a police-free zone. Many businesses are boarded up, but tents are popping up outside some businesses with signs that read, "Take what you need." The tents are filled with everything from snacks to first aid supplies and face masks. Outside of the barricaded zone, Optimism Brewing has signs in its windows which say the business is offering restrooms, charging stations, and water for protesters between 1 p.m. and 9 p.m. Meanwhile, Cairo Radio reports that Seattle police say some demonstrators in Capitol Hill are armed and trying to extort protection money from area businesses and residents. But Brandy Cruz of Q13 Fox reported three businesses gave her firm denials. On Czech News, New Chelnoth against reopening of its traditional territory to non-residents due to COVID-19. Tribal Council President Judith Sayers said in a press release that the risk is too high and the tribe is not willing to choose the economy over health. Access would remain for New Chelnoth members only. It is demanding testing for its members and screening of non-residents. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. Tory MP, hospital fundraiser ignore public health warning and mask donation photo op. Coroner's report reveals more reasons why Deadpool 2 production company fined for death of stuntwoman. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. The expert witness phase of the Cullen Commission public inquiry into money laundering in British Columbia continued last week. Kevin Como of the Transparency International Coalition cross-examined two globally renowned criminologists on June 8th. Professor Michael Levy from Cardiff University in Wales and Professor Peter Reuter of the University of Maryland. Levy is an advisor to the UK Cabinet on counter-fraud. Reuter is the co-author of Chasing Dirty Money, The Fight Against Money Laundering. He heads the university's Economics of Crime and Justice Policy Program. BC's government, through the Land Title and Survey Authority, is planning a beneficial ownership registry, but the fee would be $5 per search. The launch date has been delayed by the pandemic. Professor Peter Reuter is the first to respond to Kevin Como's questions.
When developing and constructing a public registry of beneficial ownership, do you think it is helpful to adopt what we had discussed earlier, a first principles approach, as opposed to simply relying on the basis of other jurisdictions aren't doing it this way, so we can't do it that way?
I mean, there's some value to uniformity. I mean, it is going to be important to exchange information across jurisdictions. And so that's a constraint. We probably need in some way to make it consistent, but no, it could have its own individual features, and you have to fit it into your specific law and institutional arrangements. Yeah, I mean, you should be able to at least experiment in moderate ways with differences. But I think that there's some level of consistency is probably important.
That's helpful.
So there are social costs attached to controls that we shouldn't forget about. And one of the arguments that is often made, though it may be hard to test empirically, is that if you control things more in one area and they're not controlled in another, then criminal business may flow to the other. For example, if some of the Caribbean territories have public beneficial ownership registers, but the US doesn't, and money flows to some of the US states in the aftermath of that, you know, what you've achieved an increase in morality in the Caribbean, but not necessarily overall or in relation to crimes. I mean, so you have to make a decision about what your morals are, as well as what the effectiveness of what you do is.
Thank you. If one of the principal objectives of the public registry was to enable persons from around the world, investigative journalists, NGOs, ordinary citizens, to use their local knowledge to connect falsely declared registrants to the true beneficial owners, would it be counterproductive to require those persons to pay a user fee each time they conducted a search?
Yes.
Thank you.
I mean, it would reduce the amount of trivial nuisance inquiries by people who are not very rich to demand a fee, but obviously, particularly given the parlous state of funding for investigative journalism around the world, the more you charge for those inquiries, the less investigative journalism there's going to be.
I mean, the purpose of this registry is to be used. And if you're charging people for it, it's sort of counterproductive. I mean, true, you discourage frivolous use of it, but is frivolous use such a risk as compared to encouraging utilization of the information? So, I mean, without having specific expertise about this, I would have thought that it was better not to charge.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how much, I agree with that, but it, of course, depends partly on how much expense is involved in answering the questions. But a public registry that is online and available to the public shouldn't have automatically any extra costs attached to it, in which case the argument for charging is weak. But there is not much point in having a public register if it's so expensive that people can't use it.
Do you believe globalization of our financial and commercial markets over the last 15 years has likely increased the opportunity for criminals, particularly in corrupt regimes, to launder their money, their dirty money, in Western liberal democracies?
It's hard to see how it could have been easier than it was in the time of Sani Abacha of Nigeria. I mean, he did it very openly to, you know, banks in the Channel Islands. Maybe it's gotten easier, but that's from, if I say so, a low bar. It was always very easy for kleptocrats to launder money. I mean, the great cases we know about are all quite old. The great cases involve, you know, Marcos, the Kong, Zaire dictator, Sani Abacha,
Indonesia.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been easy for kleptocrats to launder money. If it's easier now, so what?
And same thing with restricted currencies for countries as well. Say China, Russia, Iran, they have restricted currencies. And globalization has. Do you think it may have made it easier to be moving money out of those countries? Whether they're corrupt or not, but with restricted currencies, particularly through trade-based money laundering, nothing else.
Right, and hawalas, I mean, I think one has to sort of strip away the illusion that there's anything difficult about laundering money in almost any place. I mean, and certainly if you're a powerful figure and rich and powerful figure, there are, you know, let me count the ways in which you can launder, and there are things that probably make it easier, but it's never, I would argue that the evidence suggests it's never difficult.
Right.
I mean, if we go back to your original point of the things we can't change, I would suggest that globalization is one of those. so, you know, rolling back the world is not something that's very easy, though the US government is certainly seems to be.
That was Kevin Como of the Transparency International Coalition cross-examining Professor Michael Levy from Cardiff University and Professor Peter Reuter from the University of Maryland during the Cullen Commission on June 8th. On June 9th, at the Cullen Commission, the head of the RCMP's Criminal Intelligence Service of Canada said there are 1,850 known organized crime groups in Canada. 680 of them, more than 36%, operate in British Columbia. In 2019, 89 groups involved in money laundering had international links. The top five countries are the US, Mexico, China, Colombia, and Australia. More than half are involved in the cocaine market. RCMP Superintendent Robert Gilchrist told the Cullen Commission that BC is a key crossroads for crime, with major port and airport links to Asia and down the west coast to California and Mexico. 10 of the 14 organized crime groups deemed a national threat are linked to BC. Restaurants and construction are the most popular means of laundering money, along with real estate and gambling. Gilchrist explained more about money laundering in BC.
CISC has identified and analyzed professional money launderers, or called money laundering service providers, operating in Canada. These professional money laundering groups, or their key facilitators, enable other organized crime groups and its members a means to disguise and transform their illicit funds from proceeds of crime into the legitimate economy. Money laundering service providers coordinate and move large sums of money to legitimize criminal proceeds on behalf of Canadian and international organized crime groups. Money laundering service providers can span across several highly interconnected organized crime groups, and therefore are generally viewed as networks in the sense of money laundering service provision networks. I'll refer as well on to page 11 of the public report on organized crime, second last paragraph. In 2019, CISC identified a high-level network of professional money launderers based in British Columbia and Ontario. This network represents several service providers nationally and internationally, that conduct self-laundering and provide third-party money laundering services to organized crime groups. It uses complex money laundering operations through casinos, underground banking systems, nominees, shell companies, trade-based money laundering, and real estate. As noted on page 11 as well, this network of professional money launderers identified in 2019 consists of career criminals that are highly interconnected to organized crime groups, and it's believed that it laundered proceeds of crime totaling upwards to hundreds of millions of Canadian dollars. Professional money launderers, they typically possess very specialized skills, resources, assets, and connections or networks, which enable them to successfully launder significant amount of money from multiple organized crime groups. Clients of professional money launderers would be high-level threat organized crime groups that are involved in criminal markets that generate large amounts of proceeds of crime and require a diverse set of money laundering activities to avoid detection and disruption, and organized crime groups that simply do not have the resources or expertise to successfully launder larger quantities of proceeds of crime themselves.
That was RCMP Chief Superintendent Robert Gilchrist of the Criminal Intelligence Service of Canada, speaking to the Cullen Commission on June 9th. British Columbia's Special Committee to Review the Personal Information Protection Act met June 9th. Consultation on how to improve BC's private sector privacy law runs until mid-August. The Personal Information Protection Act, also known as PIPA, is the sister law to FIPA, the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Law. While FIPA covers governments and public agencies, PIPA governs the way corporations, unions, charities, churches, and political parties use personal information. Since coming to power in July 2017, however, John Horgan and the NDP have not followed through on a promise for mandatory privacy breach reporting. Jason Waiwata of the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association was among the witnesses. Here are highlights from Waiwata's presentation.
BC's current legislation has been out of date for over a decade and requires reform to keep pace with best practice. A tweak isn't going to fix this. It will not address British Columbians' concerns and expectations. Changes are needed for two fundamental reasons. Citizens expect increased privacy protection and education, and businesses face a real risk which could impact the BC economy if the province is inadequate to the global data protection standard. We recommend the BC legislature address the legislative gap, which enables private entities to exercise public functions via public resources while displaying a lack of transparency and access to information. There's a legislative gap that intersects PIPA and FIPA in instances where private companies provide a public service through contract or funding. We've also raised this issue in our prior FOIPA submissions. Concerns have been raised regarding the actions of several private companies, including BarWatch, Life Labs, and the real estate divisions in post-secondary institutions. This necessitates reform. As part of this, the BCCLA will be focusing on the privacy implications of private sector contractors or private sector community organizations sharing information with public entities. We support their recommendations. Slide 13 speaks to the need for public education on privacy rights and protections for PIPA to be effective. We recommend an increase in resources to public education campaigns regarding PIPA so that the OIPC can maintain a balance of resources in education and enforcement. As identified by the Canadian Bar Association, public education initiatives by the OIPC BC have compromised the effectiveness of processing and adjudicating complaints. The vast majority of British Columbians strongly support increasing public education about privacy rights and protection, as well as changing educational curriculum to include privacy rights awareness. Now, before we wrap up in slide 14, we want to highlight one important area where BC continues to lead. We want to recognize that BC protects personal information in the political domain and is a national leader for others to follow. It is also consistent with the GDPR. We strongly support the OIPC report and recommendations on this topic and urge BC to continue leading in this important respect.
That was Jason Waiwata of the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association on June 9th. Before the BC Special Committee to Review the Personal Information Protection Act.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the folks at the Vancouver Aquarium for all they're doing to keep the Stanley Park Attraction and Marine Science Center alive and the sea creatures fed. While the aquarium has been closed due to the pandemic, they've been selling masks with the white caps, selling seafood chowder, and even selling the naming rights for seals. You can help too. Go to vanaqua.org. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to Bob at thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. Those were the voices of Katrina Chen and Bowen Ma, with music by Bob Deeth, covering Avril Lavigne's Keep Holding On. All three are BC NDP MLAs. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 14th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on June 14th in 1900, Hawaii became a United States territory? Aloha to our listeners in Hawaii. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.